The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to our deep dive. You know, there are some thinkers who are so influential they almost become misunderstood. Karl von Clausewitz, the Prussian strategist, definitely falls into that camp. His book, On War, it's shaped strategy for centuries.
Absolutely. And today we're looking at Clausewitz, but specifically through the lens of Sir Michael Howard, who was arguably one of his most important interpreters. Howard really undertook what he called an intellectual rescue, trying to figure out what did Clausewitz actually mean.
Right, because it's not just military history buffs who should care. We're trying to understand why his ideas about, you know, uncertainty, conflict, complexity, things like friction and his trinity, why they're still so relevant, not just in war, but in business, policy, even like setting personal goals.
Exactly. Forget the idea that this is just about maximizing violence. Howard shows us Clausewitz was really a political philosopher first. He's giving us a framework for navigating any complex human situation where there's conflict.
Okay, so let's start with the guide himself, Sir Michael Howard. Why is he the person to lead us through Clausewitz?
Well, Sir Michael Howard, who lived from 1922 to 2019, was, simply put, one of the towering figures of military history in the 20th century. His authority is pretty unique because it combines deep academic knowledge with, well, real-world experience.
Yeah, he wasn't just in an ivory tower. He fought in World War II, right? Earned the Military Cross in Italy. So when he talks about the chaos and the fear of combat, it's not abstract. He lived it.
Precisely. And then he paired that frontline experience with this incredible academic career, top posts at Oxford, Yale. But the real kicker, the thing that gives his views such weight on this topic, is the translation. He, along with Peter Parrott, produced the 1976 English translation of On War.
The standard one, basically.
The standard one, yeah. Widely considered the most accurate. So he wasn't just commenting on what others had translated. Mm. He wrestled with the original German, the nuances, the specific word choices.
He saw how one mistranslated word could potentially lead to decades of strategic misunderstanding. That combination, soldier, historian, translator, it's pretty powerful.
Which brings us neatly to the main point of Howard's work on Clausewitz. Basically, to demystify him.
Yeah.
To rescue him from this caricature that built up, especially after the World Wars, painting him as, you know, the apostle of total war.
The guy who just wanted maximum destruction. It's an easy soundbite, I guess.
It is. But Howard argues very forcefully that On War isn't a how-to manual for winning battles. It's fundamentally descriptive, analytical. It's a framework for understanding war as a political phenomenon. And crucially, Clausewitz was arguably more concerned with the limits of violence than with unleashing it.
Limits, how so?
Well, his core warning, the thread through the whole thing, is that war must serve rational political goals. If the fighting, the military action, becomes disconnected from a clear political purpose,
then it just becomes...
It risks becoming mindless, purposeless violence. And for Clausewitz, that's not just tragic, it's fundamentally bad strategy. The means have to serve the end.
Okay, that makes sense. War only makes sense if it serves the state's reason, its politics. So if that's the core idea, we need to understand the context. What shaped Clausewitz's thinking? You mentioned the Napoleonic Wars.
Yes, you absolutely cannot understand Clausewitz without understanding the shockwaves of the Napoleonic era. His theories were forged in that fire. Specifically, the disaster for Prussia at the Battle of Jena-Auerstedt in 1806.
Right, where the old-style, rigid Prussian army just got obliterated by Napoleon's forces.
Annihilated. It was a profound trauma for Clausewitz and his generation. It forced them to rethink everything they thought they knew about war. Napoleon, in this context, is almost like the god of war made real.
Because he wasn't just playing the old game of kings and small professional armies.
Exactly. He harnessed the energy of the French Revolution, the levée en masse, the idea of the whole nation mobilized for war. It became this passionate struggle of peoples, not just princes.
And that seismic shift is what leads Clausewitz to his famous starting definition.
War is an act of force to compel our enemy to do our will. Notice the emphasis, compel. It's about breaking the enemy's will to fight back. The psychological dimension is central, not just smashing things.
Okay, but hold on. If his ideas were so insightful about politics and will, why did so many later military leaders, you know, in the late 19th, early 20th century, seem to read him as just advocating brute force? What did they miss?
That's a great question. Howard argues they missed a really crucial distinction Clausewitz made. He talked about two concepts of war. First, there's absolute war. This is like the pure theory, the logical extreme, unlimited violence, escalating to its utmost conclusion. It's an idea, a theoretical endpoint.
Okay, the pure concept.
Then there's real war. Actual war, as it happens in the messy world. And real war, Clausewitz insisted, is always limited. It's constrained by politics, by chance, by human failings, by friction. Howard hammers this home. No real war is ever absolute. And that directly contradicts the whole apostle of total war myth.
So he was grappling with the difference between the theory and the reality. And that reality, that messiness, is what he tried to capture with his most famous theoretical tool, the Trinity.
The Wondrous Trinity, yes.
Yeah.
It's brilliant because it captures the multifaceted nature of conflict. He says any war is shaped by the dynamic interplay of three forces constantly pulling against each other.
Okay, what are they?
First, there's primordial violence, hatred, and enmity. This is the raw, irrational, emotional force. Think of popular fury, nationalism. Clausewitz associated this mainly with the people.
Okay, the emotional engine.
Second, there's the play of chance and probability. This is the realm of uncertainty, the unpredictable environment, fog, luck, things going wrong. This is primarily the domain of the military commander and their skill, or lack thereof, the chaos factor.
And third, there's the element of subordination. This is war as an instrument of policy, guided by reason. This is the responsibility of the government.
Violence, chance, and reason. People, commander, government. It's like a three-legged stool.
Exactly. And the key is their intention. A successful strategy has to account for all three. Ignore the passions you fail. Ignore the chaos you fail. Ignore the political goal you fail. It's a holistic view.
And that provides the deeper context for that phrase everyone quotes.
War is merely the continuation of policy by other means. It's not saying go ahead and fight if talks fail. It's an analytical statement. War is policy, just with bloodshed added. Therefore, reason policy must remain in control.
Okay, shifting from the high-level philosophy to the more grounded practical side, let's talk about friction. This is something I think anyone who's ever managed anything complex can relate to.
Oh, absolutely. Friction is maybe his most enduring and universally applicable concept. It's basically Clausewitz saying that everything that can go wrong will go wrong, plus a lot you didn't even think of.
Right. It's the thousand small things. Bad intelligence, tired soldiers, broken wagons, confusing orders, muddy roads, fear. The gap between the plan on paper and the messy reality. His famous line is, "Everything in war is very simple, but the simplest thing is difficult."
It's like project management hell, basically. You plan the perfect product launch, but then marketing misses a deadline, the server crashes, and your lead developer gets sick. That's friction. It separates the spreadsheet from the real world.
Precisely. And because friction is inevitable, you need ways to push through it. Which leads to another key concept, the center of gravity, or Schwerpunkt in German.
Right, the focus point. I like this one because it forces you to prioritize.
Exactly. It's the core source of the enemy's strength, the hub of their power and movement. If you can identify it correctly and concentrate your efforts there, you can potentially cause a collapse without having to defeat them everywhere.
And Howard points out it's not always the army, right?
No, it could be the capital city, a key alliance, maybe even public opinion, or in business, like you said, a competitor's key patent, their distribution network, or maybe their brand reputation. Identifying it is the art of strategy.
Okay, and then there's a related idea that seems almost paradoxical, the culminating point of victory.
Yes, this is a crucial warning against overreach, against getting carried away by success. Clausewitz observed that as an attacker advances, their strength often diminishes.
How so? Supply lines get longer.
Supply lines stretch, casualties mount, you need troops to occupy territory, the troops get exhausted. Meanwhile, the defender might be falling back on their resources, shortening their lines, maybe gaining resolve.
So there's a point where the attacker, even though they've been winning, actually becomes weaker.
Potentially, yes. That's the culminating point. It's the high watermark. Mm. Pushing beyond it risks exhaustion, counterattack, and potentially catastrophic defeat. Knowing when to stop advancing and consolidate is vital.
Napoleon in Russia is the classic tragic example, isn't it? Kept pushing way past the culminating point and then disaster.
The textbook case. The lesson, again, is about limits, about recognizing when the balance is shifting.
All right, let's try to pull together the main threads here. What are the big themes Howard really wants us to take away from Clausewitz? Number one seems obvious.
The primacy of politics. It's everywhere. Military aims must serve political goals. Full stop.
And the reflection for us is, in any field, check if your actions, your means, are actually serving your ultimate objective, your end. Is your marketing campaign helping the core business or just winning awards for the marketing team?
Good analogy. Theme two. War, or any complex conflict, is inherently complex and nonlinear. Forget simple clockwork models. Trinity, friction, they show it's dominated by psychology, chance, context, it's messy.
Which means in project management, for example, you don't just make a plan. You build in buffers, contingencies, you accept that things will go sideways. You plan for friction.
Right. And theme three, the indispensability of historical context and experience. Clausewitz built his theory on history, not just abstract logic. Howard stresses this. Test theory against reality. Don't get locked into dogma. Adapt based on what actually happens.
Avoid theory for theory's sake. Keep it grounded. Okay, let's touch on some of those famous quotes. Clausewitz is very quotable, but often, as Howard shows, taken out of context.
Definitely. Let's revisit the big one. War is merely the continuation of policy by other means.
Howard's take.
It's an analytical claim, not a recommendation. It demands that reason and political purpose guide the violence. It's actually an argument for control and moderation, not a green light for war.
Okay. How about the definition? War is an act of force to compel our enemy to do our will.
The key word is will. The goal is fundamentally psychological, breaking the enemy's resolve, their willingness to resist. That's often more important and more subtle than just physical destruction.
Makes sense. And the one about friction. The vast apparatus of friction is what distinguishes real war from war on paper.
That's the ultimate dose of realism, isn't it? A warning against perfect plans, against assuming everything will work smoothly. It forces strategists in any field to be humble about complexity and build in resilience.
So bringing this into our world today, how can we apply these Clausewitzian ideas as filtered through Howard?
Well, in business strategy, that center of gravity concept is huge. Instead of trying to compete everywhere, maybe figure out your main rival's core strength. Is it their killer app, their customer loyalty, their supply chain? And focus your competitive energy there. Don't spread yourself too thin.
That seems practical. And for policymakers.
The warning is stark. Before using military force, economic sanctions, whatever Clausewitz via Howard is screaming, be absolutely clear about the political objective. Is it achievable? Is the cost proportional?
Yeah, you look at some modern interventions or sanctions regimes that just seem to drift on without clear results.
They often look like textbook examples of ignoring that principle. The means, the intervention, the sanctions become detached from a realistic, achievable political end. That's when you risk that slide into purposeless, costly activity.
It even works on a personal level, doesn't it? Like if you're tackling a big life, goal-changing careers, writing a book.
Totally. You need a clear policy. What does success actually look like for you? That keeps you from getting bogged down in tasks, battles that don't serve the main goal and anticipate your personal friction.
Writer's block, distractions, burnout.
Exactly. Plan for it. Build in buffers, resilience, and watch out for your personal culminating point. Know when you're pushing too hard, when you're overextended and need to consolidate your gains or just rest rather than burning out chasing total immediate victory.
Okay, great stuff. So wrapping up our deep dive into Howard's take on Clausewitz, what's the single biggest thing you think listeners should take away?
For me, it's seeing Clausewitz not as a warmonger, but as this incredibly sober, deep realist, someone trying to impose reason onto chaos. That framework he built, especially the Trinity, making us juggle emotion, chance, and rational goals all at once. Mm-hmm. It's just a timeless tool for analyzing any tough, complex situation involving conflict. He wanted to limit violence through understanding it.
Yeah, that's powerful. What struck me most, maybe because it feels so every day, is friction. Just the simple, profound truth that complexity means things go wrong and that good strategy isn't about having a perfect friction-free plan because that's impossible. It's about anticipating friction and building the resilience and adaptability to deal with it when it inevitably arrives.
Absolutely. So the final thought to leave you with maybe is this. Think about your own major goals, your own life campaigns. What is your actual strategic center of gravity right now? Honestly, how much of your energy day to day is spent just fighting friction, getting caught up in stuff that doesn't actually move you closer to your core policy objective?
A challenging question. Definitely something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.